the other way. I believe that many of us, after 16 years of interior ministers, they were all men, from the conservative CDU-CSU, were thinking when Social Democrat Nancy Faeser suddenly received that position, an interior minister who earned her first shitstorm by publishing a guest piece in the Antifa magazine about the right-wing extremist terrorist group NSU. So this was the paper by the Association for the People Persecuted by the Nazi Regime. You know, I was thinking this is a real change. Something is happening, perhaps. Maybe it will be not as bad. But sadly, that was not the case. Shortly after this little event regarding Nancy Faeser, something happened, which I think until today, no one knows what it really was. But it went downhill, and what this was about, this will be introduced to us by Anna Bisella and Chris Köver in this talk. These two are the co-head editors of netzpolitik.org, the very well-known blog about digital politics and other political issues. And yesterday, I should say that netzpolitik.org were missing 170,000 euros to have the assurance of being able to continue their work next year. So maybe consider donating so that these two can continue their work and introduce it next year to us again. And please give a large applause to our two speakers. Hello, and thank you for this beautiful introduction. You've expressed our basic sentiment quite well, I think. We are going to talk about the turn towards authoritarian times in time-lapse. We were going to talk about something else. As you may know, in October this year, there was the deadline for the call for papers for Congress, and when we submitted our paper, we thought, well, we are going to talk about the government that existed at the time, if you remember that. So we were going to talk about, we were going to show where this Social Democrat, Green and Liberal coalition had really failed, and this was about the so-called security package, which was in an ongoing debate, and ways of getting out of there and making this remainder of this term into something that would not be completely disastrous at the end, although time had got short. But then, the 6th of November came along, shortly after the US elections, of which you may have an emotional memory too, and then Olaf Scholz came about and said, I have asked the president to sack the finance minister. I can't, the interpreter can't hear this, but he's quoting from memory. And with after this whole shock with the US elections, I then had two thoughts. My first thought was, we have a head of government, a chancellor. That is interesting. My second thought was, shit, not regarding the sacking of Christian Lindner, the finance minister, and therefore the breaking apart of the coalition. He was head of the Liberal Party, but the projects that the coalition had still on their agenda weren't as bad or maybe even good. 2 days before the end of that coalition, I had sent a press release to the ministries asking, or there was an email asking what projects they were still going to implement. And when that happened, it was quite easy to finish the text. But there were many things that were no longer possible, so this talk had to be restructured. We were going to appeal to kind of motivate everyone, even though the people here maybe wouldn't need that as much. So we were not going to do an appeal, but a reckoning. And that reckoning about the term of this government, for that we will go back to the year 2021. That was the year in which the government that we've had for a few years now was elected. It was the year we were still quite influenced by events in the corona, in COVID, the pandemic. Many people had voted by mail because they were afraid of catching an infection. The whole inoculations and testings issue was quite vulnerable, quite ongoing at the time, and it looked for months like the conservative CDU would have a landslide victory. But then Armin Laschet, the candidate for chancellor, had this moment where he was laughing in the wrong moment, and the Social Democrats were catching up, and the Social Democrats having lost, the CDU had lost quite significantly, so the so-called grand coalition between the CDU and the Social Democrats would no longer be on the cards, which wasn't the worst kind of news for people interested in liberal politics. But then, of course, the right-wing extremist AfD was shockingly the strongest party in some German states. But a sense developed quite soon that, yes, it is going to be a progressive government. And they formed a so-called traffic light coalition named after the colors, Social Democrats, Liberals and Greens, all the other way around. And it went rather well. It seemed more smoothly than in previous government negotiations, when Christian Lindner, for example, had previously withdrawn from a coalition negotiation, saying, I'd rather not govern than govern in the wrong way. Then Lindner said another sentence. I can't hear it, says the interpreter. Olaf Scholz is going to be a strong chancellor, is the conclusion. Well, you have to be careful what you say. Sometimes things don't age well, and we're going to have an example of our own sayings. But Christian Lindner is quite good in not aging well. Right. So, to conclude, 2021, the situation wasn't that great. It was still the pandemic, but there was a spark of hope because, like we said, these were the interior ministers we had had before then. You may recognize one or two of them. Schäuble, de Maizière, Friedrich and Seehofer were their names, all from the CDU or the CSU, the Bavarian branch. They were not good for security politics. And we thought, okay, there's going to be a turn of the times now, which, again, that didn't age well. At the time, that word Zeitenwende wasn't as burnt as it is now. But we thought things might change. We used the word in our headline, and we thought our interior minister might not enjoy people being deported, for example. We had this kind of hope. But quite quickly, we realized that maybe that was a bit too optimistic, because what the so-called traffic light coalition then did was that the authoritarian and right-wing people were able to kind of drive them towards policies and their demands from the authoritarian right were even included in the government's actions. And before talking about this turn of the time too much, let's just look at what actually is a term towards authoritarian times. These are words that you hear a lot and you don't quite know what they actually mean. It's more a buzzword. And let's therefore go back to Adorno. And
research on authoritarianism has long been a thing. So after the Nazi thing, we thought about never again and how could this Nazi society be created at all. So in 1949, Adorno wrote the Authoritarian Personality Studies. And it's a lot about the thing with authoritarianism and authoritarian personality is a lot about personality of individuals. But it's also about the social system where they live in. So we have an influence on authoritarian ideas in the entire population, but we also have systems leading to that. And so the society and what the individual is doing. What also is important, authoritarian turn is more than just a shift to the right. We think it's not only right-wing extremists getting stronger, but it's also a number of ideas and phenomena like sexism, or general misogyny, and people turning to so-called winner types, what we can see in the US at the moment strongly. For example, we have the Leipzig authoritarianism study, which recently showed once again just how widespread widespread right-wing extremist attitudes are, and especially to things like racism, anti-Semitism, transphobia. And the most recent recent study has shown that we can see shift to more authoritarian ideas. And we also see this in politics. And we see this mirrored. It's as if politics is not trying to fight authoritarian attitudes with measures, but rather to satisfy them. And by now we see that politicians of many parties, many different parties, are using this authoritarian words, doing law and order politics, especially on the European Union level, where we now have borders being shut strongly, but also on a German level. We see it within asylum politics, we see it in how politics is dealing with protests. We've seen it in Lützerath, where climate activists protested in January 2020. Yeah, we're talking about that because it's wrong, because we think it's a huge mistake to take these authoritarian ideas, to embrace them and to get closer to them. And because it's a moment where you could have a chance, a window of opportunity to do things differently. And so we brought some examples, and Chris will start with them.
So we start with migration politics. Why are we starting with this? Well, we have the impression that it is a very good yardstick to see, looking at the way refugees are being talked about, migration is being talked about, is a good yardstick for the internal state of a society. How do we as a society deal with minorities that is particularly vulnerable? How are we talking about these people? And what we see here is quite sobering. There are racist statements against migrants. They are no right marginalized appearance anymore. They are in the reasonings behind draft laws and government declarations. Right. This wasn't after the knife attack in Solingen, that was earlier. Again, sorry, the interpreters cannot hear the sound in the videos. We can't give you interpretations for that. Scholz and his interior minister, Nancy Faeser, and all democratic centrist parties talk about refugees and migration as a threat to interior security, and with that, they put a whole group of people under a suspicion of terrorism. And that is something where we say these are right populist discourses that the governing parties have readily taken on and are driving forward. And even if we move away from words and move towards actions, of course words have consequences too, but again, compared with the previous government, compared with this government, the previous government's measures, looking back, seem like trivialities compared to what the current government has actually implemented in migration politics. The Traffic Light Coalition has overtaken Seehofer, the previous interior minister, on the right, which is quite an achievement in a way. For example, this law, the Repatriation Improvement Law. You may remember Scholz, the Chancellor, had an interview in the German magazine Spiegel, who wanted to finally deport rejected asylum seekers at grand scale. A law was passed for that. What does it say? Well, it says that the affected people can now be captured even any time during the night. They don't have to be informed in advance. unless children under the age of 12 are affected. At the same time, the police have been given more powers in searches. They can search other rooms in shared accommodation, not just the rooms used by the person to be deported. And another detail that kind of went under in the whole debate is that the agencies can now use state trojans against those helping refugees, which previously would only apply to professional trafficking, which made it possible to use the trojan even then. But now it's enough to be a helper without a voluntary helper to be the target of such measures. To overtake Seehofer is something that the new government even achieved in another issue, which is remote searches of mobile devices through the by the Office for Migration. So those that apply for asylum without papers have, as a first measure, have to hand over their mobile phones for those to be evaluated, and that is before any check whether any other milder ways would exist, less invasive means to find someone's identity. And the coalition, the Social Democrat Liberal Green coalition, didn't abolish this. The measure that was introduced by Seehofer, now we have a judgment by the Federal Administrative Court saying that this is not possible. So the new government would have had to, they would have been in a perfect position to see a mistake and correct it. What did they do instead? Instead of abolishing remote phone searches or mobile phone searches, they extended them. It's not just the actual devices that are now allowed to be searched, but, and again, that is in the Repatriation Improvement Law, also data in connected cloud storages can be used, because, as you know, more and more data is being stored in the cloud, so it was seemed, it was regarded as important to access those data too. And it's not just the people that can now be searched on with whether they carry any mobile phones on their body, which then are taken from them, but also their residences, their apartments, any kind of data storage devices can be searched for and then inspected. And the Society for Freedom Rights, which is a German NGO, regards this as a measure of nothing but chicanery, and I find it hard to disagree. Mobile phones by refugees are not just allowed to be searched by the German Office for Migration, but also German state authorities are allowed. And the target is not just to find someone's identity, but actually deport them. So people that cannot be deported because their identity is not known, because their nationality is not known, are now supposed to be captured and deported as well. And searching someone's mobile device remotely is also allowed for that. And finding out who these people are, where they come from, and government agencies can be obliged to support this. And this is not down to the red, yellow, green coalition. It was enacted by state governments, but the government didn't use their time to correct this mistake. And the responsible authorities in the German states are just using these options to the maximum, because now we have a deportation offensive, and to get people deported even more quickly, several German states have now established central authorities with various names, but the functions are similar. These are supposed to support deportations, group deportations. They support in finding identities, and this these days includes evaluating mobile phone data. And we've seen that at least six German states, which we have marked in this map, are now have now established these central authorities, and they have their own forensic tools, which they bought. They are not relying on the cooperation with federal institutions or the police as it used to be. They created their own institutions. They bought the forensic software so that the authorities dealing with foreigners can send in these people's devices and have them searched. To remind you, these are people that haven't committed any crime. They are just obliged to leave the country. But in contrast to people that are suspected to have committed a crime, There is no judiciary oversight over this. The authority will simply decide on this and carry it through. Right. We like to submit many queries under the Freedom of Information Act. And if we ask for details about the licenses of the software, which kinds of software are being used, because this is a very severe intrusion into people's privacy, then we receive answers like this one from the Green Party-controlled Family Ministry from the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, and they responded that they cannot disclose this information because, if you didn't know this, foreigners are a subject of threat prevention. So therefore, publishing this information would endanger public security.
Okay. Another low point is, in all of this is the payment card thing. It went a lot through public. Let's go back to Horst Seehofer. Horst Seehofer in 2018 thought it would be good if you would, if people who fled to Germany are treated as badly as possible, and so to give them benefits in kind instead of cash benefits. So they can't decide for themselves what they buy, but instead they get vouchers for clothing and other things back then. This was considered by the Greens, who were in opposition back then, as ideological, but the Social Democrat Green Liberal coalition managed to go even further and introduced payment cards for all over the country. Some of them find that's great, such as Horst Seehofer, such as Markus Söder, who said that they great, we can prohibit them from buying alcohol and they can only buy Leberkäse, which is Bavarian food. So in the end, they made lots of people on the conservative spectrum very happy, which also was shown by the right-wing extremist AfD agreeing to the law in the Bundestag. So now people or asylum seekers can only withdraw a very limited sum of money. Usually that's 50 euros per month. Sometimes there's also a bit more if they have children. They may only use it in a certain region. And this leads to lots of problems for them. For example, people in rural regions where you can't pay by card everywhere. People who would like to buy food in small shops where you can pay cash only, people who want to go shopping on a flea market because they only have very few money, but they cannot do so anymore because they now only have those cards and no cash. And the entire motivation, well, we have heard many different reasons for that. Some of them said we want to prevent people from transferring money to the country where they came from, because they may pay people smugglers by that, even though there's absolutely, it's absolutely not proven that this is happening. Then we have people like Christian Lindner saying that we must do this to stop our so-called welfare state to be less attractive for them, to make the people not come to Germany and in best case even leave. And Lindner and his party colleague Marco Buschmann, who was Minister of Justice, even said, well, we could take the benefits to zero, and all of this has been possible to say. You can now write guest pieces about this in this so-called progress coalition. And they justified this by saying, well, we shouldn't put taboos on ourselves and leave those topics to the right-wing populists. Now they're just doing this by themselves. What does this mean in the end? So if you go back a step and take a look, well, what kind of laws and measures are these we're talking about? In political science, there is a term for them, and it's symbolic lawmaking. And these are laws where it's clear it's not about their actual effect in practice. Everybody knows in practice this will not reach goals such as less people fleeing war and hunger and violence to Germany, or that there will be more deportations. Who, if you don't have ID papers, no embassy will randomly give you some because you phoned your mom in Morocco, and it's very improbable that asylum seekers won't come to Germany now because we have a payment card. But that's not what this is about. It's about performance. It's about taking action as a performance. So the message is, look here, we have a tough stance in migration politics. Refugees aren't welcome here. Please go somewhere else. If you have to flee for war and hunger, please don't come to Germany.
And, well, technical measures are very well suited for this kind of performance of taking rigorous measures, because this solution approach, of course, with technology, it looks so modern, doesn't it? We are doing something with AI, we're doing something with mobile phone forensics, and the details of what is happening, which individual rights are being infringed, they can be quite easily hidden between this kind of talk of innovation and therefore swept under the carpet. And it's quite clear that the reasons that why deportations fail are quite complex, but who likes complex explanations? If I am the state premier of a German state, I would like to say, well, I have this mobile phone forensics and I'm now going to have a much better success rate in deporting these foreigners. And that is quite the kind of sport that we are seeing. This is a reason to be proud these days. And right. And then it doesn't quite matter how many studies there may be that say that these measures are not really sensible in terms of migration politics, and how many experts repeat these messages, because it's not about that. It's about the signal. It's about a message to people that may potentially vote for these parties, telling these people that something is being done. And this doesn't mean that this would be ineffective and would not change anything. It does. Simply by shifting what is allowed to be said and what maybe in the past was regarded as fairly right-wing, making that into a normality, that something like the Liberal FDP or the Social Democratic SPD might say, that changes things. We're going to continue now with a new chapter, and this is Nancy Faeser, the Interior Minister, and the coalition treaty of the Red, Yellow, Green coalition. What is changing, what is shifting, and the text that we were writing about the turn of the times in the Interior Ministry, well, we are going to show how that aged badly. We showed the text earlier that we had published. The coalition treaty says quite good things, actually. They were planning in a strangely formulated way to do away with this, or to deal with this issue of telecommunications, data retention, and do it in a different way. This is a blanket storage of telecommunications metadata without cause, and this was always enacted and then fought against and nullified by courts and then reintroduced and so on and so forth. And we thought, well, now the new coalition is going to come in and it's going to bury this project, this kind of honorless, dishonorable game. And they thought they were now going to introduce quick freeze, which means we're not storing anything, without cause and in advance, but we will wait. And if we have a reason to store, then we will freeze these data with a telecommunications provider, and we will get a judicial review and a judicial order, and then we will access these data after that. And that was supposed to be a basic rights conforming or less damaging to social fundamental rights variant of telecommunications data retention. That was the agreement. And Mr. Buschmann, the Minister for Justice, who said these very tasteless things about migration politics had come up with a draft, but then the interior minister went back and said, no, sorry, we do need telecommunications data retention, although we had thought of doing it differently in the treaty, coalition treaty. So they were going to wait for another judgment by the European Court of Justice. That judgment came along, which sadly for many people involved didn't quite clearly reject these methods, and that meant that Nancy Faeser then escalated this argument a bit and said we have to have a storage of IP addresses to secure children's welfare, to defend against terrorists, or whatever topic was popular at the time. And that left us in a kind of stalemate situation because the Liberal Party had done what they can do, and Nancy Faeser had done what she does, demand something that was not in the coalition treaty, and it was a back and forth situation. And at some point there was an agreement, okay, we will now trade data storage against the limitation of apartment rents. Strange, but the Social Democrats would be given this limitation on rents, which the Liberals hadn't wanted, and the Liberals would be given the quick freeze, which the, at least Mrs. Faeser hadn't wanted, and everything would be fine. But the back and forth continued. There was another agreement to quick freeze, and that was in April, and then nothing really happened, and then the coalition broke apart. And the debate goes on. We're going to talk about it later, but a short look back at Nancy Faeser and the coalition treaty, part 2.2x. There are many other details in the treaty that are, well, that are good to demonstrate this amazing shift that happened to a very strange conservative authoritarian kind of politics. The first beginnings were quite early in the government, when in 2021, this whole COVID denial thing became virulent on Telegram and elsewhere, including threats and concrete threats of attacks against politicians. And Nancy Faeser then said, OK, we'll have to ban Telegram first. And she quite failed in making herself appear competent there from a technical point of view. But this was the first time that we noticed something isn't quite right with the guest editorial in the Antifa paper and what we've written. Maybe there are some old assistants that Horst Seehofer, the previous conservative interior minister, had employed working for her. And similar things happened regarding chat control, the scanning by operators of content that would be encrypted. This is a debate that happens at the EU level, but of course, it is also a debate where Germany, as an EU member state in the European Council, has a position that they put forward, and it looked like Nancy Faeser would chart the course and say, we are in favor of chat control. Then the Liberals came along, and the Green Party wasn't quite in favor of it. And fortunately, this side prevailed, but then there was hackback, and there's a lot about vulnerability management. So a really consequent or thorough exclusion of this doesn't seem to be on the cards. So that is a short look back at what Nancy Faeser did and how she went in strange ways. She did finally sack a few of Seehofer's former assistants, but that wasn't really felt in her politics. The next issue, another one where we can well see which strange directions this whole took, is the whole debate about biometrics. Now, in late 2024, we might think that this is all about these various attacks, but this started much earlier. It started with the arrest of the previous terrorist Kletter, who was arrested, we think, because through a journalist research using facial recognition, whose legality you can put into question. She was almost found because she was living public life, taking part in capoeira performances. There was this debate about why these tools are there, and if they are there, why can't the police use them? Because it seemed that the media framed this in a way as if the police had no means of using face recognition at all, which is, of course, nonsense, because the police does have face recognition software. It's just that they cannot broadly scan pictures from the internet and build a database from that. So the media discussion about this and the corresponding surveys that were run, are the police, should the police be able to run face recognition? Well, surprise, the majority was in favor of that. And then Nancy Faeser came along and submitted a draft for a change of the law for the Federal Criminal Police Office and other laws, and they were going to be permitted to match public data from the internet with their databases. Now, how would that work? Would they just download this from the internet somehow? How? And this would normally not be allowed, because at the EU level we have certain regulations like the AI Act that would actually exclude such actions. And again, it was the Liberals, the FDP, who blocked this until the attack in Solingen, where a knife attacker was at a town festival. And that gets us to the part of the talk where we thought that we would be talking about that the whole time, the so-called security package after the Solingen attack with which the coalition was responding to the attack in Solingen.
So after the attack, everybody is saying, well, you have to react on an attack like this. And how does the coalition react? With a few stricter gun laws, but also with all the things which Nancy Faeser had on her wish list anyway, but didn't get them through until now because the Greens or the Liberals had blocked them in before. So here's a quote of Maximilian Funke-Kaiser of the Liberal Party, who said in 2022, public facial recognition and such things shouldn't exist in a democratic state with rule of law. But then Solingen happened, and then all of this can exist in a democratic state with rule of law, because there were also regional elections in three states, especially where the AfD was also strong, and so everything had to get quick. So what is in the so-called security package? Above all, it's more surveillance. We have a biometric search, Anna just mentioned, for the BKA, for the federal police, which hadn't been okay a few weeks ago, but now the Liberals have agreed and this should be introduced as well. It's a very, very strong. Interference into basic rights, but no matter what, the federal government decided to allow this. Then we have big data analysis and merging of various police databases, which also have been on the Ministry of the Interior's wish list for a long time. So example like Palantir's, where many, many databases, including many, many data of people affected by something, of witnesses, all of this should become searchable by AI. And then random checks on people in so-called weapon prohibition zones in the public should become possible. And the possibilities for setting up such zones are so broad in the law draft that random police checks will get possible in many, many places in the future. But this was only one part. And I think what comes now is so the worst point of what I can tell in this point, and the worst point of racism we have seen in the past years, in a logic only that works only with the past coalition. We need more and better and tougher deputations. So everything Lindner and Buschmann of the Liberal Party have asked for in the past, now we are getting them. So for so-called Dublin cases, where a different EU country is responsible for the coalition, wants to completely cut social benefits, people who are recognized refugees, who travel to their home country for whatever reason, should completely lose their protection status. And because cell phone searches are not enough, the authority for refugees and migration should also be allowed to use biometric searches on social media to identify people, to be able to identify people better if they don't have papers. Yeah. That means what the coalition did is taking a huge basket, putting in terrorism, migration, refugees, and mixed it all up as if these things were strongly interconnected, making a huge group of people responsible for a single person who committed this attack. And that's a point where you could say, well, the coalition government isn't being driven by the AfD, they are doing all of this by themselves. And because regional elections were ahead, all of this should be done within weeks. Now you can see the timeline, and they nearly nearly succeeded as the part of on combating terrorism with more powers for the federal office on criminality. Went through the Bundestag and so the Parliament and the Bundesrat, the German second chamber. The second part, which tightens asylum legislation, failed in the Bundesrat because it didn't go far enough for the CDU-CSU-led states. But this doesn't mean that those demands are that it's over. After the Magdeburg attack, Faeser is coming again and talking to the press and asking for all of these powers, even though that's a case where it's clear this person who committed this attack wasn't known by their name, no biometric stuff, no facial recognition, anything wouldn't have helped here, but curiosity thing of yesterday, we can just ask for it.
Okay, I think we'll need a bit longer than we expected, 5, 6, 7 minutes. Maybe we'll have to cut on the questions and move them to the discussion after the talk. Because the one thing that you can do for a turn towards authoritarian times is to not act. You can, of course, introduce more and more controls, but you can also simply not do anything when at a time when something, some sensible action would be called for. For example, if many people take to the streets because Nazis have been met with AfD politicians and hatched a secret plan. This was researched by the Corrective Collective, and many, many people took to the streets, and this included politicians from the governing coalition too, and they were part of these large and small and diverse demonstrations, and they were holding very beautiful speeches, and more than 4 million people were on the streets. What were the political consequences of what had happened there? Not nothing. Well, at least we made it possible that in the very dying days of this government, the German Constitutional Court is going to be better protected from changes of a future right-wing government, but they did not do many things that would have been called for. For example, a law to further democracy, that would support initiatives for democracy and for an open society and a living together in solidarity to ensure their financing. It would have been, it looks uncertain if the AfD party is going to be banned. And even if it does, the party may probably find its way into the next parliament before. And many, many things that could strengthen state institutions did not happen. And this can be such big a problem, as big a problem as things that did happen. And what do we conclude from that? What is our conclusion? Again, I couldn't hear what Christian Lindner, the finance minister there, said. I think it's probably after he had been sacked. Well, it's not as simple as that, but what you can say is that the time of the red-green-yellow coalition was a big disappointment. If you take your mind back to the hopes that we had, it started well. A few things, such as the immediate abolishment of the ban on advertising for abortions, there were a few highlights. The law for self-determination was carried despite some of these very bad things that were in there, and the statements from the Justice Ministry about house owners' rights. Domestic authority, but a large part of the projects that were important in society, simply the traffic light coalition simply didn't manage to get through. It took too long, blockages were introduced, delays were introduced, and time just ran out, and it would have been too late because the laws had been put forward too late, because this window of opportunity was getting smaller and smaller, and now it's been closed. And many projects that Anna mentioned, and I would like to also mention the law on support against violence, which surely is not going to be passed. The coalition could have ensured that shelters for women finally would be financed on a solid basis, which Germany years ago should have done. This is not going to happen now. The abolition of the ban on abortions itself looks very bad. It's still a criminal act to perform an abortion in Germany, and that is tragic for various reasons. The one reason, it doesn't look like the next election and next potential government will be any more progressive. So the debates that are being led, the conservatives are proud to say that this law regarding abortion that is not ideal but an achievement will be abolished. And some people are praising people like Elon Musk or the Argentinian president. We have calls for more biometrics, a lot of things that are approaching us. And it does not look like anything in the sense of progressive politics can be expected. So we're going back to a state of constant defensive action rather than considering how we can actually improve society. And the second item that I really am furious about, through such a behavior, people that might still care about basic rights, that might want to exert solidarity and act in solidarity, do no longer know what in the world of real politics they could still do. For example, which choice they might make on such a ballot paper, which is the minimum of participation, of course. And this might, in the end, lead to people saying, oh, hey, what can I do? I cannot do anything anyway. And if even under this at least half progressive government, such a lot of shit happened, what could possibly happen now? What sense does it make? So we're going to finish by saying, well, it's not everything is terrible. We don't have a great answer, because if we had, we would surely be still implementing it. We already be implementing it, but we have a few things that we do consider important. And outside these real political structures, there are things that can be done. You can write open letters, you can write petitions, and participate in all, with all these, this is all participating in this real politics theater. What can you do if it gets even worse? One answer you can give is that solidarity is sabotage, and the authoritarian structures could be sabotaged, which doesn't mean that we should put fire to everything. It means that this misanthropic things can be stopped, and you can adapt what you want to do and what you are doing. You can support grassroots organizations through voluntary work, through money. There are many organizations that look after help refugees. You can also simply get informed and inform others. And if you have information that should be public, then you should make it public. And that, I think, is something that is more important than ever, so that we know what is going on. And if you can do this, and if you have the structures to do it, go to the courts, take legal action. That often does work. The Society for Freedom Rights, GFF, has shown this in their case against the payment card. Sabotage misanthropy, which you can do regarding this payment card. And people then say, okay, if we have this card, you will exchange it for cash, and the state of Bavaria had to understand that this was not an illegal action. It is not a problem to do. You can do this if you have the means to do that and the capacity. What is also important is it is okay to not be okay and say, this is all too much, I can't deal with this world anymore, and say, well, at the moment I don't have an answer, I may need a moment. So that makes it even more important to form gangs in a way. And there is no event better suited for this than this Congress here. So tomorrow you could take part in the demonstration against biometric surveillance at Heidi-Kabel-Platz near the main station towards Hansaplatz in Hamburg. Okay. The route is from Heidi-Kabel-Platz, which is near the main station, to Hansaplatz. So take people with you. So you can collect people to go there. And it's important to not be swept under, but link up with people who feel a similar kind of pain and have a similar worldview. What can you do together and in small and large? That is something you can communicate about, and that's it. Thank you so much.
Vielen Dank, Anna Biselli und Chris Köver. Ich weiß nicht, hört man das? Ja. Test, test, test.
Test, test, test. Thank you so much. So we have a short moment for questions. If there are any. I will smile to the back. Everybody who quickly wants to leave, please do so quickly. Take your bottles. And I see a question from the Signal Angel. But the politicians are only one side of the problem. The authorities are actually deporting people, are following the orders. Do you know what the people in the authorities think? Are they, do they strive to push through, or anything?
Well, there are various institutions. It's impossible to respond in a general way. There are always people in these institutions and many different ways of getting things done. You can see that quite prominently in various prosecution authorities. You have prosecutors around the Bavarian city of Augsburg, where we know that they're not very friendly towards activists, and they have been rather drastic. There are other prosecuting authorities who may be seeing things differently. But regarding government institutions, Arne will have a talk about this. He wrote a book where this was part of the prepping. I don't know, maybe that will be an issue. The people that we talked about in our research, the impression generally was that they are quite motivated. So the incentives are there to be a person that is doing good work successfully. You have to fulfill certain quota, and it's quite sobering to see that this area of mobile phone forensics and searches of mobile phones for identity determination, these are people that could be right here, but they are highly motivated to find as much from these people's mobile phones as they can, and they do believe they are doing the right thing doing that.
So one more question, microphone four. Yeah, the populist opinion concerning payment cards is going more and more into majority opinions. And what message should the previous coalition of SPD, Greens, and Liberals should have sent instead of that to? Reassure the majority after attacks like an act of.
I think you can simply call for evidence-based politics. Okay, well, I don't want to be in a politician's skin, of course, but the question is, what actually went wrong, if something can be seen to have gone wrong, and then see what was the cause, what failed. It could be a structural failure, it could be an individual failure. or a political failure, and then consider what can be done and not just pick any measure that and call for it that as is completely unrelated. Because it's incredible to see how we have people that announces things under their real name and then call for biometrics. What kind of logic cloud do I have to live under to connect this and to see that as a consequence, and then see were there any problems in communication between government authorities or agencies, or did someone just forget of working on a case, what actually happened, and to try to kind of deal with that and bear with the pressure, and also have the compassion and not use the time for any kinds of calls.
Ganz schnell.
If you ask very quickly, we still have time for 1, 2, 3 in the remaining 5 minutes. Okay, my question is your opinion concerning the activities of the Federal Office for Protection of the Constitution. So there's a new category, delegitimizing of the state, which is now being, the people are now being surveilled by the federal office. What's your opinion concerning that?
Could you answer this? I am a bit overwhelmed. I don't know, can we push this your way? Well, this is nothing that we have dealt with so far. I think that's enough.
Okay.
My question is about the payment cards you analyzed again. I'm asking myself why you say that's symbolic lawmaking, because many see in the payment cards just a first level for digital central bank currencies, which are very realistic and not symbolic. Aren't you playing down this?
Well, symbolism is not about it having no consequences. As we've explained, it does have consequences, but it's about what people say with these things, what they claim to be trying to achieve is not being achieved. And you have a payment card and you say we want to have it so that people no longer come to Germany, because the system of push and pull factors is on my mind, this model, very old model actually, about people moving to a country, being attracted by a country, and people being kind of detracted from staying in a country. And this is just pointless, because there is no kind of evidence to say that the social welfare structures in a state have a significant effect on the decision to migrate, and that for people's decisions to move away from country. So what you say that you are going to say, you are say no longer making it possible to transfer money to traffickers, there is no evidence for that. You cannot prove this. So the supposed solution, if you would follow this logic, which we do not, even then it cannot be a solution. And this is what we mean by symbolic. And it's important to make that clear. Symbolic lawmaking doesn't mean that it has no consequences. The payment card has drastic consequences for the people affected. This was about the digital central bank currencies, the coming currencies. Okay, another question.
Hi, thanks for your important information and putting all this together. Do you have thoughts about the real actions, which will be very soon, and ideas for things or your networks could do? I'm thinking about materials you could use, you could share.
Well, I think as people with a journalistic background or hat, we're not the best people to answer this. There are many people that think about this, and I think there is actually a meeting on this at Congress, a self-organized session, I think I saw it, where people are considering what can you do with the next election about it and despite it. And I think that people in various organizations are thinking about this. And with that, we are at the end of this talk. Another warm applause. Thanks a lot to Anna and Chris. Thanks.